here in our state. For Education Matters, here on WGTD, I'm your host, Steve Brown, thanking you for listening. Have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support comes from Gateway Technical College, where you can learn the business world from a marketing, financial, and organizational point of view. A 2-year business management degree starts you on the financially lucrative path to becoming a department or mid-level manager in a wide variety of companies. Get information at gtc.edu.
Support comes from Kenosha Winter Harbor Market, featuring BSW Farm, offering select cuts of beef, bison, goat, and lamb, available as roasts or steaks or ground. The beef is 100% grass-fed. The market is open Saturdays from 9 to 1 at the Rody.
Support for WGTD comes to you from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. Andrea's, a proud supporter of programming on WGTD HD.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. I am hoping that everyone is pleasant this Saturday morning. This is Marlo Harmon, your host for today's Community Matters. And we are going to be having an interview with a very interesting person, but it's with regards to a serious subject, human trafficking. So today we are speaking with Carrie Hemmick, who is founder and executive director of the Racine Coalition Against Human Trafficking. And we are going to be discussing this issue and how it relates to our community and how we can possibly get involved to decrease this issue. So, Carrie, welcome aboard and thank you for being interviewed with me today. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Thank you for having me.
Great, wonderful. So, this subject is a very diverse and kind of complicated subject, human trafficking. Tell me, how did you get involved in something so serious and an issue that really doesn't seem like it would impact this area? So, how did you get involved?
It was about 3 to 4 years ago. I've always worked in nonprofit. Mm-hmm. My entire career, about 20, 25 years, I've been in nonprofit. So to be in another nonprofit is something that I've got experience with. But the subject of human trafficking came about when I was leading a group called Dining for Women. And Dining for Women is an international organization that looks at women and children in poverty around mm-hmm. the world and different issues, like maternal health, well, human trafficking obviously kept coming up over and over, whether it was Vietnam or India or Pakistan. Just the subject of human trafficking kept coming up. And since our group is a bunch of local women who are mostly from Racine and Kenosha, we just started talking about, well, I wonder what that looks like locally. You know, what does human trafficking look like here in our city? And honestly, I had just heard about the Super Bowl. This was a couple years ago. I'd heard about, it was in Indianapolis that year. I'd heard about the different stings that were happening. It was starting to make some press and some headlines. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of looked up, we just Googled who in Racine works with human trafficking, and the Dominican Sisters came up. And apparently the Racine Dominicans have been studying human trafficking at that point for about 7 years, so mm-hmm. almost 10 years now.
Okay.
And so I made the connection and just said, hey, would you come talk to our group about what it's like here locally? In the meantime, Sergeant Jesse Matoyer from the Racine Police Department is a friend of mine and was also in our group. And she said, you know, we have an investigator who's now working on human trafficking cases. Let's bring him in as well. Uh-huh. So just one random fall night, we all got together in someone's house and just started really talking and realized that there's no social service programs or assistance really in place at all for victims in Racine.
And that's true.
Yeah. And so we thought, well, what can we do to help in that situation? And that's honestly how this all started. It wasn't meant to ever be a 501c3, organization, but that's where the demand led us to. And we just felt that there was a need, and we kept just moving it up and up just based on the demand in the community.
Okay. Now, human trafficking, to me, it just seems just people enslaving someone.
Right.
But it may be more than that. What specifically, by definition, is human trafficking?
Well, human trafficking is the selling of another person or exploiting another person for profit or gain.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at a couple of things: forced, fraud, and coercion. So we look at force. If somebody is taken against their will, mm-hmm. That obviously happens, and forced to either do labor or sex trafficking. It can be either mm-hmm. one. If we look at fraud, they get into it thinking they're going to be doing one thing and it ends up being another. That would be, hey, would you like a modeling career? Let me take some pictures
right.
of you. Or there's a great job in the United States and you're an Indian man who happens to be an engineer. And so you go to the United States assuming you're going to have this great job, and mm-hmm. it turns into trafficking. I actually happen to know somebody that happened to. And then there's the coercion. There's the you need to do this for me. If you don't do this for me, I'm going to hurt your family. So there's several ways that people get into it. And I think that's kind of one of the big misconceptions is people get into it unwillingly.
Uh-huh.
But people also get into it very willingly, not
really?
Understanding where it's going to go, and then not able to get back out of it.
So they may get into it willingly, but kind of under just ignorant of really what possibly
exactly.
could happen or will happen.
Right.
Now, you said that you started the thought or discussions about it because you were working with women and in poverty.
Right.
Why is poverty and human trafficking, it seems like it's linked. When I think of human trafficking,
right.
I automatically think of like a third world country,
right.
somebody who is just selling their child because they're trying to make money.
Right.
So it just seems like it's more somewhere else.
Right. And I think that's what a lot of people think. That's what I thought.
Uh-huh.
I honestly hadn't thought about it much more than that at that point,
mm-hmm.
Not realizing that it happens in the United States. And it's called the crime that's hidden in plain sight. And that's
mm-hmm.
because these victims are all around us. They're going to school. They're going to church. We happen to know that the Latino community, the traffickers allow their victims to go to church because they know it's an important part of keeping them satisfied and happy
uh-huh.
and within their grasps.
Oh.
There's pimps recruiting in schools. We know
mm-hmm.
the middle and high schools are the main target. So it is very much within our society. And I think it does look a little different sometimes internationally.
Mm-hmm.
We see the images of human trafficking victims on the shrimping boats and being forced to work 16 hours a day on these boats and not, if you get sick, you're thrown overboard.
Uh-huh.
We hear about the children in the cobalt mines in Africa who are working to mine, important things for technology and the batteries that we use in our cell phones. We hear about the plantations of tea and chocolate and how children are enslaved in there. And so
mm-hmm.
these are things that really exist. And I think
right.
that they don't exist in that quantity here. We don't see these plantations full of human trafficking juvenile victims.
Right.
What we see more, we do see some labor, but I think predominantly in the United States, we're really dealing with sex trafficking. That
okay,
seems
so
to be
more,
the major.
More
right.
or less than anything, it's sex.
Right. Well, and not to discount that there isn't labor.
Uh-huh.
There is labor, but sex trafficking is what I primarily deal with here in Racine.
Okay. What's the difference then between human trafficking for sex compared to prostitution or smuggling?
Right. Well, prostitution is where somebody gets to keep their own money. They're making their own dates. They're calling the shots. There's no one else that's working with them. They are keeping 100% of their money.
Mm-hmm.
That is considered prostitution. However, the interesting thing is there is no such thing as child prostitution. And that's something that we're really trying to work on with the laws, because anyone under the age of 17 cannot consent to sex.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they cannot be considered a prostitute, and they should not be criminally charged. And I can't remember what your original question was.
What's the difference between human trafficking
and
prostitution? Is it the same thing?
Right. And the
Pretty
act
much.
Can be very similar and very much the same
because
thing.
Because you said the prostitutes get to, in prostitution, not the prostitutes.
Right. I know what you mean.
In prostitution, the individual typically gets to keep 100% of their money.
Exactly.
So if they don't, is that human trafficking?
That is human trafficking.
Really?
Absolutely, yes.
So if something just stood out to me, you call the human trafficker a pimp.
Right.
And
And they're not always a pimp. Sometimes if it's labor, they're obviously that's not a pimp. That's just a trafficker. But
okay. But
a pimp is definitely somebody who exploits, and it's not always women. It can be men, too. It can be boys. It can be girls. You know, so when I do say women, it's just because I lapse into what I deal with predominantly.
Okay.
But to men and women, so or to boys and girls, it's somebody who exploits them and then takes the money.
Mm-hmm. How do they get the victims? How are the victims typically gotten? I know that you said someone may think that they're coming to an area or to in a job for service and they're tricked.
Right.
Is that typically how?
That is very much typically how I think that labor trafficking occurs.
Okay.
Absolutely. When it comes to human trafficking for sex, there are a couple different ways. And the predominant way is it's a Romeo pimp. It's the boyfriend experience. Mm. It's a grooming very much like you would groom a child molester would groom his victim.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times these victims get into it because here's somebody who is being kind to them, paying them attention.
Right.
Telling them they're beautiful. Maybe they've never had a birthday cake before and this person's giving them a birthday cake.
Yes.
Or a lot of times they lavish them with gifts initially. And then it turns into, I need you to do this for me.
Mm-hmm.
There's something you need to do for me. We had a victim in Racine County that, you know, she ran away from home. She was mad at her parents. She was walking down the street and a guy, a trafficker, just pulled up and, you know, started talking to her. And, you know, initially she wouldn't talk to him, but because he kept pursuing and persisting and saying, hey, what's wrong? You know, I'll be happy to talk to you. Are you hungry? Took her to McDonald's, got her a Happy Meal, and proceeded to make thousands of dollars off of her. So for the price of one Happy Meal, a trafficker was able to retain a victim.
Wow. Now, in situations like that, how can a parent or a loved one or even someone in the community, how are we able to tell that a victim is of human trafficking or prostitution? Because sometimes, especially like in areas where prostitution can be legal in, you know, in bunny ranches and things like that. How would I, just as a regular Joe, what are some characteristics of a person who is the victim of human trafficking? What are some things that I can possibly notice to determine and help?
Right. Well, a lot of the times what I tell people is, you know, if it's somebody who doesn't speak English, who looks like they might be out of place, you know, kind of look to see if does that person carry their own ID. You know, are they in the country legally? Are they able to get out of the whatever home they're living in? Are they held against their will? For sex trafficking, it looks a little different just because, like we said, it's, you know, it's hidden in plain sight. It's all around us. So what I tell people to look for is just, you know, is it different from the baseline for that person? Is all of a sudden that person becoming over-sexualized? Are they dressing a little bit more sexy? Are they carrying purses or jewelry that you know they cannot afford all of a sudden? Maybe there's an older boyfriend in the picture that doesn't make sense. The relationship seems off. Or maybe that person is being picked up either from home or school on a regular basis by different people all the time. Sometimes the pimps will brand their victims with tattoos. So, you know, if you notice a tattoo that's new, you know, ask about that. Well, what does that symbol mean? Because a lot of times, you know, it's not just a name. It could be a symbol or a color or whatever that pimp uses to brand his victims so that other pimps know that that is his property. I'm trying to think of what else. There's so many different ways to sort of, I guess not one thing really will stand out. It's more the combination of several things.
You said something about there was a victim in Racine with the Happy Meal.
Yes.
Okay. How did anyone know? Did she come out and tell? Tell me a little bit of how her situation became exposed.
Well, actually, that is a case that I believe is still going on, so I can't really talk about any of the specifics,
okay.
And I don't really know on that side.
All right.
But a lot of times what will happen is either they will come to the police for help,
okay.
Or a lot of times what we do, too, is active operations. So
active operations.
We do law enforcement undercover operations to rescue victims. That's one thing that we do differently here in Racine that a lot of places don't do because it is expensive. It does mm-hmm. require a lot of people to coordinate such an effort, but we do that on a ongoing basis.
Okay. Now, recently you were acknowledged and praised for your work, so congratulations again for the acknowledgement and just the praise of that. Can you explain how educating others and fighting against human trafficking, how it helps our community?
Right.
How is it that may just overall just impact our community in such a negative way?
Right.
Because there has to be victims who are getting something out of it, even if it's emotional
right.
support or that emotional acknowledgement. And then, of course, the victimizers
right.
are getting something out of it, if we were to look at that kind of mind frame.
Right.
So how does stopping it, how does it help our community?
Right. Well, what we do is we know that education and awareness is the number one way to prevent human trafficking. Mm-hmm. I mean, studies across the country have shown that. So we do focus predominantly on education, awareness, and training.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is empower the community to see the signs, to recognize what human trafficking is, how to speak to a human trafficking victim to kind of determine for yourself if this person needs help,
mm-hmm.
and then where to go to find help. Because we know that, you know, if you have a lot of human trafficking in your community, you're going to have, obviously, a lot of organized crime. They just go hand in hand.
Okay.
A lot of times gangs have learned to traffic a human is actually less jail time.
Right.
And it's a lot harder to be criminalized for that than it is for a gun or a drug.
Wow.
So if you think about it, if mm-hmm. you have to traffic a gun or a drug and you sell it, then you have to buy another one in order to sell it again. But
mm-hmm.
if you have a human, you can use them over and over and over. It's
mm-hmm.
cheap labor.
Mm-hmm. Describe the typical victim. Is it someone in this area?
In this area,
is
right.
it usually someone from out of state brought here and no one really knows, out of the country and brought here, or is it typically someone local who, like you said, may have been groomed
right.
and pacified until they're involved in this crime?
Right. We've actually seen all of the above. We've recovered a victim. She was from Shanghai. She
mm-hmm.
did not speak any English. She was run out of an organized crime in China
mm-hmm.
Through Canada and just happened to be in Racine when we called her on her escort ad.
Mm-hmm.
So we have seen, we've seen the gamut. We've seen everything. But I would say typically you will see a young female. She probably 50% would be from our area. The other 50% would not be from our area. We
okay.
see a lot of women from Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
That is because we live on the circuit that a lot of traffickers take from Illinois to Wisconsin to Minnesota to North Dakota. It's a big tract and it's a big circuit that we live on. And then on top of that, we live right between Chicago and Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
So geographically, we're just sort of in a position where we're going to have to deal with this problem. And I think that because we all share victims and not one victim really, I would say that you can't really categorize one victim as this is what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen women with graduate degrees in college being trafficked. I've seen 13-year-olds being trafficked. Like I said, I've seen a 64-year-old woman being trafficked from Shanghai. So I'd say that a lot of our victims, I'm always surprised what we're going to find.
Mm-hmm. You have been working with the Racine Police Department
yes.
with this. How did that come about?
Oh, goodness. Let's see. That was probably back when we started talking about the coalition developing. And the Dominican nuns had gone to Chief Art Howell, the police chief in Racine, and told him that they really think that human trafficking should be a priority for the city.
Mm-hmm.
So he looked into it, agreed. I came about. We started working together as a partnership. And then the police department kind of realized that it's a really important component to have that social service component to rescuing a victim. If you're going to recover a victim, it's important to have the services there available to them so don't just walk back to their trafficker.
Right.
So that I think that the police department just really saw that this was something that is important and needed, and it's actually become a state model. And we've been recognized by the U.S. Attorney General's office for the model that we've developed in Racine.
Okay. Tell me, what are some of your duties and your role as executive director? What are some of the things that you do on a typical basis to assist with this?
I work as an advocate, so I do work directly with the victims.
Okay.
I work to assess whatever needs they need. You know, is it medical? Is it financial? Is it a job? Is it are they addicted to something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they have a safe place to live? So a lot of the advocacy that I do myself, we also have one other volunteer that does that as well. And then as far as the role with executive director, I do a lot of training. So we train law enforcement, educators, administrators, students, medical personnel. We've trained caseworkers, social workers. So we're really trying to get into the community and just train everybody in a very customized way so that we're speaking to the audience that we're working with, so that we can empower caseworkers to look for it while they're doing their job. We can empower firemen to look for it while they're doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's the most important part of my job, is really just creating the awareness and making sure education and training occur. And it looks differently. Sometimes we do concerts, and sometimes we bring in a speaker or survivor, because no one can tell or explain human trafficking like a survivor can. And that's a component I don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hooked up with survivors that can do that for me. So we really try to find different ways to educate the community. And that's what we primarily do.
Great, great. Now, you said something that just kind of sparked my curiosity. You said something about the lady that you met that was from Shanghai.
Yes.
You contacted an escort ad or something.
Yes.
So
we work off.
Tell me a little bit about that.
We work off of Backpage. Backpage.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Backpage?
No.
All?
I'm
okay.
Not.
All right. Backpage is like
that
Craigslist.
That sounds a little
sleazy.
I know.
Sleazy. It sounds
Backpage.
A little sleazy. I know. And it's a lot like Craigslist, where you can find furniture and pet stuff and whatever else. But the escort site for Backpage, before all the hoopla just started a couple months ago, when Sheriff Dart from Cook County really took down Backpage, actually. He went to all the major credit card companies in the country, Visa and you know, Discover and American Express, and said, hey, did you know that human traffickers are profiting off of being able to use your credit cards on Backpage? And so all these credit card companies said, oh, well, we don't want any of that. And they withdrew. So Backpage was making $9.2 million a month off their escort sites a month, off their escort sites alone. Went from that to not having any ability for anyone to pay for an ad.
Oh, that is
amazing. It was amazing. Sheriff Dart is very brave. I know he was threatened.
That is brave.
He's very brave. He was very threatened, and Backpage actually tried to sue him, but a federal judge said that it was not, you know, they were not going to be able to sue him.
Wow.
So
kind of like How to Catch a Predator.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. So we actually just call, you know, it's a local Racine number. We called the number, set up the date, and that whatever phone we called in Racine bounced to another phone in the United States, which bounced to a call center in Canada, which bounced to Shanghai. And between all of that, it was organized and she was set up. And so that particular case, they did end up detaining her overnight, mostly because they weren't sure what to do with her. It was the middle of the night when we found her. We wanted to make sure she was safe. We wanted to, you know, have some more time just to kind of figure out what to do. But unfortunately, the traffickers figured out where she was, and before the next morning we could even get to her, they had hired a lawyer to pay her retaining fee and put her on a plane back to China.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has to be profitable. I mean,
oh,
when you
absolutely.
Said that the ad piece of it just brought in millions of dollars, I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's a $32 billion industry worldwide.
Wow.
About $15 billion of that comes from first world countries like the United States.
Wow.
In 1809, if you were to buy a slave, you would pay, in today's standards, approximately $40,000 for that person.
Wow.
Today, if you were to buy a slave, it's about approximately $90 a person. So the labor has become incredibly cheap. And then we know that pimps typically have up to four girls in their stable. That's what they call their family, is the stable.
Oh, wow.
And each girl can bring in up to $100,000 to $200,000 a year. So, you know, there are pimps that we know of in Milwaukee that make $1 million, you know, a year easily. And so it is good money, and it's hard cases to prosecute. I mean, a lot of times either victims don't recognize that they're victims or, you know, they still love them. And we've had girls on the stand saying, but I love him, even though they know he's exploiting her. They know what he's doing is wrong. You know, he's being charged. But I think that sometimes these traffickers do a really good job of grooming their victims, and the victims will advocate for them, absolutely.
Wow.
And it's a hard bond to break.
Wow. Well, again, listeners, this is Marlo Harmon, your host with today's Community Matters with WGTD 91.1 HD. And we are talking to Carrie Hemig, who is founder and executive director for the Racine Coalition Against Human Trafficking. So welcome again,
Thanks
Carrie.
For having me.
So we have talked about what human trafficking is. We have talked about some ways you may be able to identify it. And we've also talked about how the crime for it isn't as strenuous as other crimes, selling drugs or selling guns or things like that.
Correct.
But how do you go about or how do you catch not the trafficker, but the individuals that are actually purchasing the sex or the service? How do you get those individuals? Because I'm going to look at it from, you know, the back way. If you stop those individuals from even purchasing the services, then it could also decrease. So how do you work with that?
Well, actually,
that concept.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. That's not something that we focus on here in Racine, just because of the expense of these operations. They feel it's more important to recover victims and to shut down traffickers.
Okay.
But absolutely, you need to look at the Johns. You need to look at the buyers. You need to you need to look at those people and make sure that they are being prosecuted as well. And there's actually a wonderful woman I'm friends with. She's a survivor. Excuse me. Her name is Marion Hatcher, and she works for Cook County Sheriff's Department, and she actually runs the National Day of Johns, and she organizes a sting across the country that occurs on one particular day where everybody goes and they actually do arrest Johns. So each city and each state is different on how they approach that, but absolutely the community of anti-human trafficking knows that prosecuting Johns is important, and that should be the next focus.
Okay. All right. You mentioned how some pimps or human traffickers will allow the victim to go to school or go to work or be in the community or do things as a way to satisfy them, pacify them.
Right.
Why can't the individuals just leave?
I know.
Would seem like
it's the million dollar question.
Yes, that the person could just leave.
Right.
Is this a misconception? And if it is a misconception, what other misconceptions are there possibly as it associates with the victim and their just ability to leave, desire to leave, or and access to leave?
Right. And that's one of the things, you know, I mean, honestly, a lot of times these women, you know, everybody starts at the bottom, but there is a process. There's a rank. There's a hierarchy to the structure of this crime. And a lot of times these women become the bottom, and the bottom is kind of the right hand person to the trafficker. She's typically the one that watches the girls, takes care of them, takes them to a doctor if they need to go. She's also a recruiter. So a lot of times these victims have felonies because they've been put in a position where they're sort of the buffer for the trafficker. And if somebody's going to get caught, it's going to be her, not him. Or a lot of times, you know, this becomes their family. They are taken away. Either they don't have a family or they've been taken away from their family. And so these people do become their family. And so either the pimp gets them hooked on a drug, maybe, you know, a lot of times we see heroin. And, you know, people will do anything to get the fix of heroin because the detox is so awful.
Yes.
Or maybe he gets them pregnant. pregnant and then there's a child involved, there can be a lot of complication and layers to it. Or, you know, what if she's been out of the workforce for 4 years and she's being trafficked? When she goes back into the workforce, how is she going to account for all those years that she's been missing? You know, what has she been doing? There's definitely a stigma in our society to prostitution and human trafficking victims.
You said something about there may be drugs involved or other things that are involved. And because I'm an alcohol and drug counselor, I have worked as a counselor for drug addictions, but I also do dual counseling. So there may be individuals who have mental health issues and are on drugs.
Right.
Or they have been, they're suffering through PTSD.
Absolutely.
And
we see that a lot.
On drugs.
Right.
Do you provide services that deal not only with the piece of what they will go through as far as being a victim of human trafficking? Do you provide services or do you partner with other agencies that provide services to deal with some of those other issues?
Right. And we actually partner with other agencies. We do not provide any direct services ourselves except for the immediate. We are victim advocates. We actually do that through the Women's Resource Center, which is a domestic violence shelter in Racine.
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely hook them up. We felt like early on it was important not to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
There are so many great services in Racine. And let's tap into those. Let's utilize those. And if they're not trained to deal with human trafficking victims, let's make sure they get trained. So this is something we're definitely working on, and we've got some great service providers, sexual assault services, our SANE program at Wheaton that deal with sexual assault victims.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Hope Center, which is fantastic, and NAMI, and all of our shelters. Everybody is really on board and more than willing to help, and it just takes a phone call, really, because we've developed those relationships.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's really good. How has social media, the internet, or any of those type of, the advent of just period, the internet, how
oh,
has
the
that?
Internet. Yes, the internet is very much a problem.
How so? Or does it make your job easier?
No.
Because you can get on the internet and maybe see some of the transaction.
Right.
I don't know, but.
Right. No.
Does
the,
it
the internet
make it
complicates things for sure.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, you know, back in the day, the girls would walk the track. And so, you know, the police knew where the tract was. They, you know, you could kind of keep an eye on victims. But now that we have the internet, everybody is behind a computer. The people aren't out on the streets anymore. You can order a girl off of Backpage and order a pizza and probably get one before the other. I mean, seriously, that's how easy it is to order somebody off of Backpage. And so the internet definitely, while it provides so many good resources for us, is definitely a problem in trying to help victims, especially because people can set up, you know, different profiles that aren't actually them. And
mm-hmm.
so it's even harder to find people.
Yeah. Okay. How many victims are typically male? Whether it's sexual or whether it's for labor.
Right. And I would say you would typically see males more in labor than you would sex trafficking. But there's absolutely males in sex trafficking as well.
Uh-huh.
I'm only familiar that there has been one case with a male involved in sex trafficking here in Racine.
But there still has been,
absolutely. What? Yeah. And I would imagine, and this is just a guess, that Milwaukee and Chicago definitely see more of it than we do.
Mm-hmm. Why would you think that they would see more of it than Racine, Kenosha?
Bigger city. A lot more transient people on the streets, maybe. They see a lot of survival sex in Milwaukee. I know they're working on that because that can easily turn into human trafficking.
Uh-huh.
You know, Milwaukee is known as definitely a training ground for pimps. I don't know if you knew that.
Mm-hmm.
But the book on the game, which is what they call trafficking, or, you know, trafficking is the game.
Uh-huh.
The book on the game was created by a pimp called Pimpin' Ken. And he created...
There's actually a book.
I've ordered it off of Amazon.
And the title of it?
It's called Pimpology.
Are you serious?
I am absolutely serious. The rules of the game. And these traffickers follow the rules. There are, so many rules. Like, you know, a girl cannot just sit in the seat next to the pimp that's reserved for the bottom girl, who is the hierarchy. Or a girl cannot walk in front of the pimp. She must walk behind. A girl cannot look another pimp in the eyes. If so, that can be an exchange to, I want you to take me. And and they can be an exchange of a victim. There's so many weird, quirky rules that I was not aware of until I really looked into it. Absolutely, right? I mean, you wouldn't realize how organized this was. They are so organized that they actually host, there's a convention every year. It's called the Players Ball.
Now, I've heard of that. But see, I thought that that was just TV.
Exactly.
No, I'm being honest.
No,
I really
understand.
I thought that was just sitcom type thing. So
no,
there really is
a
Players Ball
convention. Yes. And, you know, it's promoting the lifestyle. And I'm with you. I kind of heard about it. I had no idea what that meant. And I just thought, oh, well, you know, pimp is kind of a cool word. You know, pimp my ride.
Right.
We talk a lot about pimping. So I just kind of assumed, oh, it must be just sort of a nod to the genre of the pimp that you imagine with the big fur coat and the cane and the top hat and whatever. And that definitely is to an element in there because they are selling a lifestyle. But this particular convention, it was held at the Pfister in Milwaukee a couple years ago.
The Pfister?
The Pfister held it. And last year it was in Madison.
Really?
Yeah. And this is the national convention.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Interesting. You have me speechless. I don't even know what to say about that because I would imagine that if something like that was going on, that it wouldn't be in Wisconsin.
Right.
It would be in Las Vegas. It would be in New York. It would be in Chicago. The bigger
cities.
Cities.
Right. In 72 counties in Wisconsin, all 72 counties have dealt with a human trafficking case. It is everywhere. And I think that's what we're also trying to educate people on. It doesn't matter if you live in the city or in the suburbs. We have human trafficking cases out in the middle of the farmlands, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it really is everywhere. And we can thank the internet for that.
Okay. Something that you said about the whole issue, and because my background is in psychology and sociology, I am wondering how many victims go back to their pimp or go back to, you know, this lifestyle after they have been groomed or brainwashed or have been removed from family and friends and the support network that will encourage them to get healthy. So after you find a victim and you have pulled her out of that lifestyle, how do you, what is the aftercare? How do they go about continuing to grow and be healthy when all they know is the pimp and the, what did you say, the squad? The family?
The stable.
The stable.
The stable.
The stable.
Yes.
And
I
the
know,
stable.
It's a horrible name for it, but it's not, I did not make it up.
So what's the aftercare like after they've been pulled out? Or is that not, or is that maybe not your organization's service, another organization's service, but could you tell me a little bit about maybe
That we do tend to follow the victims as far as we can. What I'd rather do is if the victim's not from Racine, which, you know, we talked about 50% or more aren't from Racine, I hook them up with services in their own cities so that there is somebody following them. Because we know that having an advocate, having somebody stable in their life is so important not to go back into it.
Right.
Because a lot of times, you know, if there's not an addiction to a drug, it's still an addiction to fast money.
Yes.
You know, trying to convince somebody to go and work for $12 an hour at a job that, you know, 10 hours a day when they could go and do this and it's a lot more money, whether they get to keep it or not, the perception is a lot of times that they're keeping it. The pimps will convince them, oh, I'm saving for your college education, or I'm saving the money for you for whatever reason.
Right.
So a lot of times they, even though they're not getting the money, there is a perception that they are getting it. So I think it is hard. I mean, the statistics say that at least seven times a helping professional will see a human trafficking victim before they're identified as a human trafficking victim.
Wow.
And the failure rate as far as getting them out of the lifestyle completely is fairly high, which I think is hard for a lot of people who get into this with such good intention of wanting to help victims, wanting to rescue people. And then when that person goes back into the lifestyle willingly, as far as we, you know, understand it, it's really hard for people to deal with that. But I actually see it more as we're planting seeds. We are talking to them. We're giving them information. We're planting the seeds, and they may not get out completely then, but maybe the next time they will.
Is that how you stay motivated in yes. with such a serious issue on a day-to-day basis?
Absolutely.
Believing and understanding that it may not be this time, but we are planting the seed for the individual to
absolutely
to grow and to get healthier, and it's a process.
Right. And eventually, I mean, they'll tell you it was time. They realized it. Mm-hmm. Whatever happened, whether they were beaten or held at gunpoint or whatever the tipping point was for them, they will remember. I truly believe some of the things that we put into place, and they may end up getting help.
Over the next 2 to 3 years, what are some goals that the Racine Coalition Against Human Trafficking may have or may implement? What are some of your goals towards your vision that you hope to accomplish in the next couple of years?
Oh, goodness. That is a good question that I haven't really thought about a whole lot, because we seriously have been chasing our tail to keep up with the demand at this point.
Oh, wow.
And so I think really what we're looking at is we just really want to elevate the level of training that we provide. We want to bring in experts. We wanted to train people more ourselves as well. We want to develop curriculum. That's a really big goal of ours, is to get into the school systems.
Oh, really?
Like I mentioned, the average age for a human trafficking victim as a girl is ages 12 to 14, and the average age for a boy is age 9 to 11. So wow. We're talking, you know, middle school is when really the grooming takes place, and in high school as well. So what we'd ideally like to do is get curriculum into all the middle and high schools in Racine, into their health curriculum, so that starting in sixth grade, they're developing a base of what is a healthy relationship, what does that look like, and then it goes on from there into the sex trafficking information.
It's interesting that it would be so young, because I'm thinking, where are the parents and the guardians? And
right.
They would suspect or know if a child is missing or...
Right.
So,
well, a lot of times, you know, they're still going to school during the day. So no one from school is calling, because they're, you know, going up to Milwaukee at night to be prostituted. So a lot of times it's hard to even see it. You know, other times really it could be the families doing it. There are mm-hmm. families that traffic their own children. Mm-hmm. That's definitely common. A lot of times the parents are incarcerated or not present at all. There's a high percentage of runaways and truancy that we see in trafficking. Uh-huh. Within 48 hours, one out of three runaways will be approached by a trafficker. It's a really scary average, because if you think about it, if we have 300 runaways in mm-hmm. Racine last year, 100 of
did
those
we?
We did. 300 runaways, 100 of those would have been approached by a trafficker, according to the statistics.
Uh-huh. Wow. What is your ultimate reward for doing this on a day-to-day basis? What rewards you from this?
Oh, that's a good question, too. So deep. You know,
because I saw your family. I was there when they gave you the award, and your husband so supportive, your children just beautiful. So
thank you. It really, I think it is. It's just, you know, I think everybody has a responsibility to do whatever they can to make the world a better place. And that's going to look different for everyone. The amount of time you put into it's going to look different for everyone, depending on the season of your life. And for whatever reason, I was chosen to do this. I feel very strongly. It was a path that I took, and I haven't regretted it ever since. And it is fulfilling. It's wonderful to know that so many people are being educated on such a vicious crime. I mean, it really is sort of the human rights violation mm-hmm. of our generation. Mm-hmm. And the UN is acknowledging that, and countries around the world are starting to acknowledge that. And I just feel like it's time for us here in the United States to acknowledge that as well.
Well, Carrie, I want to personally thank you on behalf of our community.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for the work that you do, and I wish you the absolute best.
Oh, thanks.
If there were someone who wanted to get involved or wanted to volunteer and assist, what email address could they email you at, and what phone number could they call if they know of someone who may be a victim, or they just want to assist and help with this issue?
Yes, absolutely. And anyone's willing, if they want to contact me about victims, absolutely. The email would be racinecoalition@gmail.com. You can also go onto our website and contact us that way. It's www.racinecoalition.org. If you suspect a human trafficking victim, I highly recommend calling 911. The police are encouraging it. Don't feel like, well, this may be one of those instances where, you know, I'm overreacting. Not necessarily. They want you to call. So I would encourage everybody, if it's immediate, call the police. If you want to ask more questions, feel free to email me.
Well, great. All right, listeners, that is our segment for today. Again, we were talking with Carrie Hemick, who is the founder and executive director of Racine Coalition Against Human Trafficking. I hope that you enjoyed this segment as much as I do. And I hope that you continue to be active in your community to make this a safer place for all of us. Talk to you, and hopefully you'll hear from me next time. Again, this is Marlo Harmon, your host for Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.com.